someone is suspected of a really serious crime, they might be fired from their job as a kind of side effect. Employers don't want those allegations harming the company's reputation. And in any case, felony suspects sent to jail to await trial can't show up for work. But for some people employed by the United States Army and credibly accused of sexual assault or child abuse or domestic violence, losing their job might be the only consequence they face. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. The practice known as administrative separation is supposed to be used to remove service members who turn out to be unfit for the military. But my guest's investigation shows it's sometimes used by the armies to kick out soldiers facing allegations of violent crime who are allowed to leave the service and escape court-martial without having to admit guilt, face restrictions on owning firearms, or register as sex offenders. Viana Davila is a reporter with the ProPublica Texas Tribune Investigative Initiative, which published the article she wrote with co-author Lexi Churchill, titled "The Army Increasingly Allows Soldiers Charged with Violent Crimes to Leave the Military Rather Than Face Trial." Viana, welcome to Think.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So you open this story by telling us about two cases of soldiers accused of assaulting women in 2017. One was a man alleged to have had sex with a fellow soldier too drunk to give consent. That was in Alaska. The other involved a soldier stationed at Fort Hood in Texas who was alleged to have assaulted his wife. How does it happen that criminal allegations filed against active duty service members are handled either by the military or by local law enforcement?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a really interesting part of the military justice system, which in so many ways mirrors our, you know, the civilian justice system, but there are some really key differences, and this is one of them. You know, both of these soldiers were, you know, accused relatively soon after the alleged offenses took place. The Alaska allegation happened much faster. And in each of these cases, you know, the one of them happened off post and one of them happened on, or the alleged allegations happened on post. And typically, you know, the military, army, or any branch will decide if something's off post, should we prosecute it or should the locals prosecute it? And almost every county in the country may have a different way of approaching this. They may have different agreements about how they handle it. In the case in Texas, initially the local county attorney said, we're going to prosecute this. And then the military stepped in and said, no, actually, we'd like to do it. And in Alaska, because it happened on post, there's an agreement there as well in which the local officials could have prosecuted, but the Army decided to look into it. And in these cases, both soldiers were investigated. They were charged. Their cases were referred for court-martial. They were arraigned, meaning the charges were read against them. But then that's where this administrative separation, it's called an administrative separation in lieu of court-martial, comes in. There's a million types of these administrative separations. And this is the kind that can be used when the military feels there may be a credible allegation against someone. They've determined probable cause, but they maybe think they can't win at trial. There's a slew of reasons that they might decide to withdraw. And so what happens is the service member essentially has to ask for this. They request it. And if the commanding general grants it, they leave the military without any conviction on their record.
So they do receive something other than an honorable discharge, right? What might that mean for a service mm-hmm. member in terms of like benefits and service record and all of that?
Right, sure. That's a great question. Typically, they receive an other than honorable discharge. They actually could hypothetically get a general discharge or honorable, which are considered better than an other than honorable. But typically, they get an other than honorable, which is the worst kind of administrative separation you could get. And basically, that potentially could eliminate your ability to get a lot of benefits, to get medical benefits once you're discharged, to get, you know, a GI Bill was brought up a lot, which is the education benefit that veterans can get. This getting this might eliminate that for you. A lot of people we talked to talked about just the shame of having that on your record, that it's a big deal for soldiers to have that follow them because it's going to be on your DD-214, which, you know, think of it as like your report card almost for being in the military, that employers will often ask for if you say that you were in the military, and it's going to show that you had this other than honorable. So it can also affect employment. Employment, it's possibly going to affect in particular is if you're trying to get another government job or work for law enforcement, that could definitely hamper you there. But I've heard people say, you know, it could hurt you if you want a job at a fast food restaurant as well.
So I get all that, but it's nothing like a rape conviction will hurt you.
Right. I mean, yeah, exactly. And that's some of the folks we talked to raised that. I think the question is, you know, a lot of what we focus on are these more serious charges. You can get this type of discharge for more, I mean, you know, minor is a relative word, but for drug crimes as well. So I think that's something we want to point out. But certainly, if you've been accused of sexual assault, rape, domestic violence, and there's evidence, potential evidence against you, but you have this as an option. I mean, many lawyers we talked to said, you know, I will recommend my client take this if I think there's any chance that either they're going to be convicted of the most serious charge, or if even if that doesn't stick, that another charge might stick that will result in them either serving time or at least having a conviction on their record. And also, if you get convicted of a sex offense, you're probably going to have to register as a sex offender.
Right. And while an administrative separation in lieu of court martial might well look bad on one's military record, I mean, those discharge papers, do they explicitly state why the soldier was kicked out?
This was, from what we have heard, no, it doesn't typically include the specifics. Questions might be asked by an employer, like, why do you have this other than honorable? There, but you know, your average employer typically isn't going to know. This gets a little wonky, but if I'm a, again, like a government employer, I have access to certain federal databases that might show me that you were investigated by the military for something like sexual assault. It wouldn't show you convicted, but it might show you investigated.
Why was the option for administrative separation in lieu of court martial created for military service members?
Yeah, and this was, you know, a little tricky to nail down. I mean, we know that officers, which are higher ranking, in the military, had this as an option for quite some time. And in the 50s, it appears that's when it started to become an option for enlisted service members. As a way, you know, historians we spoke to and legal experts we spoke to said it was really the idea was maybe there's someone who's not fit for the army. They just can't seem to get in line. They're chronically late to formation, which is just a problem if you're, especially if you're a new soldier. And so this is a way to get them out quickly. You don't really see it being used for really serious crimes until more recent history. You see a lot of it being used in Vietnam, which was obviously a surge in manpower for the US Army. You see thousands and thousands of people being discharged administratively in this way. But again, it was considered more for more minor misconduct, for going AWOL. Tons of people went AWOL at that time. But now our reporting has found that we're seeing it really used increasingly, at least in the Army, which is the largest of the branches, in more serious cases.
And not only in serious cases where military prosecutors look at the evidence and think there's just not a case at all, right? There are some cases in which people are credibly accused.
Right. I mean, the data that we have, the limitation of it is that it is only data that includes soldiers who were arraigned for court-martial. So again, the charges were read against them. They had been charged. The flip side of that, though, is they've been arraigned. And so, you know, the Army has made a decision, legal officers made a decision. We feel there's enough here to take you to trial. You know, if we didn't, in theory, if we didn't have enough evidence or probable cause, we would not have charged you. So we're moving along in the process. And we looked at a lot of different cases that, at least from the records we could see, seem to have evidence of confessions or of witnesses, things like that, DNA evidence.
So your investigation found this being used more often for more major crimes, but we should note this practice as a whole has been criticized for quite some time by the GAO.
Yeah, my colleague Lexi Churchill found this report from the Government Accountability Office from 1978 or so. So this, just to put that in context, as I mentioned earlier, that's sort of the end of the Vietnam era. they were taking a hard look back at this process and said, we really don't feel like this should continue. We feel this is an expedient way to get rid of problem people, is what the report said. And they argued that Congress never intended for the process to apply to criminal cases. And we should say, the military justice system goes back a very long time. Our American justice system is modeled on the British Articles of War. But the modern military justice system, which is really what we're talking about here, that more closely resembles what we think of as the civilian justice system, is relatively young. It started post-World War II in 1950, 51, with the creation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That just matters because a lot of these questions that we're dealing with are relatively recent in terms of how should this system operate.
Fiona, these days, one in four soldiers charged with sexual assault while serving in the Army is just let off through administrative separation.
That's a great statistic that you brought up, and I should mention, like, these kinds of stories, you're combing through different data sets, and that number comes from a data set that's actually available to the public right now. It's probably no secret that the military has been scrutinized for quite some time about how they handle sexual assault cases. So, in recent years, the Department of Defense has produced reports every year looking at how they're doing, basically, how many sexual assaults are being reported, not reported, what are the prosecution rates, things like that. And so we looked to my colleague, Ren Larson, who was our data reporter on this project, looked at some of these reports. And specifically looking at, okay, well, how often are people accused of sexual assault as an adult, because that's what these reports cover, are allowed to leave? And this data is actually a little different than what we used for the bulk of our story, because our story, again, looks at soldiers who were, arraigned. They were charged and arraigned. This data actually covers folks before that process, so it gives a bit of a broader picture. And yeah, like over 10 years, 2012 to 2021, more than 1,000 service members across all four branches, main branches of the military, were allowed to leave after being charged with sexual assault. But the most of them were in the Army, as you said, about one in four. The next highest branch, I believe, was the Air Force, with a rate of nearly one in five.
And just so everybody understands this is not like a plea bargain where you skip trial because you've admitted
Exactly.
guilt. And it is not even like a deferred adjudication where people are allowed to go free, but they would face really harsh consequences if they're caught committing some further crime.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. We had a few legal experts we spoke to from the military said, well, it's kind of like a plea bargain, or it's kind of like deferred adjudication. But we talked to other folks who said, well, really, really, it isn't. Because A, both of those things leave something on your record that it's fairly easy to see for the public. A plea bargain is definitely a conviction. Yes, it's possible your conviction may be for a crime that feels less harsh than what you're originally charged for. And yes, you may get less time as part of the, or less, a lower, less harsh sentence as part of that plea bargain, but you're going to get a sentence, you're going to get a conviction. You may even be registered again as a sex offender if the plea bargain includes pleading to some kind of sex offense. This isn't that. And deferred adjudication, for those who aren't familiar with it, it differs a little bit in every state. But in Texas, essentially, it means, okay, I'm gonna give you another chance. You've pled, usually you plead guilty or no contest to a charge, let's say domestic violence, which is a case that we looked at in our story. This young man was got deferred adjudication for strangulation one case, and then discharging a firearm in the other. In that case, if you break any of the rules that are conditions of your probation, a judge can revoke that sentence. But in the military, there is no A, there's no revocation possible, and B, a judge has no control over this decision to grant an administrative separation in lieu of court-martial. That is entirely made by commanders. Legal advisors are supposed to weigh in, we should add, but they do not make that final call.
Who in the military makes decisions about how to handle criminal allegations against soldiers?
Oh, that's such a complicated question. And that's changing. We're in the midst of that really changing. One of the big issues for advocates who've wanted to see the justice system changed has been commanders, military commanders have traditionally made the decision of whether you should prosecute a crime at all. I'm speaking broadly, but that's generally how it has worked. Judges or juries, they're called panels in the military, might make a sentence, but for years, some of those sentences could be reversed by a commander. Congress passed a major change a couple years back that actually is supposed to go into effect at the end of this year, that would take a lot of that power away for commanders from commanders in certain cases, including sexual assaults, kind of the most violent or severe cases like homicide, sexual assault, so that now it's a new team of special prosecutors who are supposed to decide, almost like a district attorney's office, should we pursue charges in this case or not? However, commanders still have control over the vast majority of charges that are available to them in the military. So, drug use, a commander still decides that should go to court martial, aggravated assault. And in the cases that we focused on in this story, administrative separations in lieu of court martial, it's a little unclear what's going to happen. The Army told us, we think that this new office for the Special Trial Counsel, which I alluded to earlier, in cases that they handle, so your sexual assault cases, your homicides, we think that they will be weighing in on the decision whether to grant these to basically to whether to let the soldier go or the service member go, excuse me. When we asked the Department of Defense about this, they said, well, that's still TBD. So, I mean, I am curious what happens and who continues to have the power of these cases.
So it's possible, Viana, that some of these soldiers would be found innocent in a court martial. It's also possible they would be found guilty. But because their cases are not prosecuted, those who might in fact be guilty don't face the kinds of legal restrictions they otherwise might, right? Can you talk about what that might mean for their communities after they leave the military?
So one of the experts we spoke to, who's a former military Air Force attorney and who's now a professor in New Mexico, basically put it as you are potentially let someone who could be a serial rapist out in the community, even though you knew there was you believed there was enough probable cause to charge them. But now you're saying, you know what, never mind, let's not do that. Of course, the Army's going to say, well, if we can't win at trial, we can't win at trial. So at least this is something. If we give them another than honorable, this is something. But there's really no public record of this. Or very, I should correct that. There's very little public record of this. The military justice system is very opaque. It's very hard to understand. Most people don't understand it. And again, as I said a few times, if you may have been convicted of sexual assault, you would probably have to register as a sex offender. If you don't go to trial at all, that determination just isn't on the table anymore. There are federal rules that determine if you're found guilty of domestic abuse, you aren't supposed to own firearms. Again, if you don't go to trial, you will definitely not be subject to that. And on the flip side of it, you don't get the chance in any of these cases to prove your innocence. If you really believe you're innocent, you don't get that day in court. And there were lawyers we talked to who said, there are soldiers who don't want to take this because they maintain their innocence, but we all fear that they just may not win.
What about victims here? If the Army has declined to court-martial someone based on a case, especially a case that happened off military property, do those victims have any recourse? Can they go back to the DA in their local jurisdiction and ask them to prosecute?
They could, and this is such a complicated question. Like I said earlier, often if there's a case that either the civilians or the military could take, there we have seen instances where there are discussions between the two. Should we take it? Should you take it? Legally, they both could prosecute it, but we tend to find that that doesn't happen, that they tend not to do it at the same time. So in theory, for example, in Alaska, this case that we looked at, there's an agreement between that local DA and the Army post there that the local DA can actually take cases that occur on post. That is not the case everywhere. And so then in theory, after the army said, never mind, we're gonna accept the soldier's request to leave instead of taking him to trial, the local DA could have possibly pursued that case, and possibly the victim in that case could have gone to the local DA. But they have no record of that soldier in their system. So does that mean they decided not to prosecute it, or does that mean that the army didn't notify them that they were administratively separating the soldier? We don't know. And I don't always know if victims in any case, in any system, are aware of how these things work. These systems are so complicated, and it's not made easy to understand how to navigate them.
And as you point out in the piece, victims may or may not have the stomach to start over from scratch in trying to get justice.
Yeah, that was something we consistently heard and have heard in a lot of our reporting on the military justice system of, these things can drag on for a very long time. You're trying to move on with your life. Do you want to sit up on a stand and testify against your alleged assaulter? And that's sometimes the reason that we've seen where they might say, you know what? Whether they say this before a soldier asks for a separation or whether it's after, that seems like at the moment the best deal for them. But there's the person in the story who we talked to said she regrets that now, and there's someone else who we interviewed who didn't ultimately make it into the story, but essentially said the same thing.
Were you able to identify some disincentive for the army in pursuing courts martial against soldiers who are accused of violent crimes? Is there some reason why they wouldn't want to prosecute most of these?
I mean, what the army has said to us is, if we don't think we have enough evidence to win a trial, these people have a presumption of innocence, but at least we can do this. And they also very much cited, and this is in the piece, that kind of the examples we were just talking about. If there's a victim, a survivor who doesn't want to testify, their argument is that makes it hard to win, but at least we can do this. And for some of them, and they said we want to listen to victims, and there's a lot of trauma-informed recommendations that you should listen to what a victim wants. If they don't want to move forward, don't do it. I think the flip side of that is what we've already talked about. Well, why not try a plea bargain? Because it's possible in a plea bargain, we talked to a civilian lawyer, said, that's often what we do in cases where a victim doesn't want to testify. We try a plea bargain instead. And we can keep them off the stand, but still get a conviction on this person's record. I can't say exactly why the army, any other reasons they don't want to do this in some cases. I'll go back to the report we talked about earlier, this watchdog report from 1978 from the GAO that recommended this practice ending. Well, basically, the Department of Defense said not long after that, well, it would just take too many resources to have court martials all the time for these cases. Whether that's factoring in now, I can't say for sure.
Vianna, obviously, one compelling reason for prosecuting people accused of crimes is to prevent them from committing more crimes. What happened after that Fort Hood soldier was allowed to leave the army without having been court-martialed?
Yeah, so this is such a complicated case. This was a soldier who was accused of attacking his wife at their off-post home in Killeen. That's the home of Fort Hood, which is a very large army post in central Texas. And so she went to the local authorities to start with. And as you said, Bell County Attorney's Office, they were going to prosecute it. Then the army said, no, we want to. And then never mind, the army said, never mind, this soldier asked to be discharged, get an administrative separation in lieu of trial. And that was granted. So Bell County said, okay, we're going to prosecute this. But that took another year. In the meantime, this former soldier was arrested in a neighboring county for attacking his girlfriend, so a different woman. And in that case, she accused him of strangling her and biting her. She eventually had to escape their home with two kids in the home and call for help from a parking lot. And so there was a case of, would that have made a difference? Certainly the victim in that case said that to us, and that's in the story. if the army had done something on the first case involving the soldier's wife, maybe this wouldn't have happened to me. Ultimately, Bell County did, prosecute him for the original case involving his wife. He got deferred adjudication for one of the charges, but as I said, that was 2 years after the initial case. And then after he was arrested for the case involving his girlfriend, he was accused of, she accused him of attacking her again. He wasn't arrested or charged in that case, but, there is some signs of repeated patterns.
So the thing I don't get, Viana, is why the army would have anything to do with that case in the first place. It happened off post at a time when the soldier was not actively doing army duties. I mean, let's take an organization like a university that has its own police force. A crime that a professor is accused of committing is not handled by that university. Why does the army claim the right to do this?
Oh, you've the million-dollar question, and this is the source of so much of the debate about the military justice system and advocates who just don't think that the military has a place doing exactly what you've said, whether honestly on post or off. What should the military really be prosecuting people for non-military crimes? Again, so these are domestic violence assaults or sexual assaults. Why not give that to a local DA, county attorney, and leave, the disobeying your commander or the AWOL charges to the military, the military specific crimes of the military. The military has greatly resisted this, these efforts to take those kinds of cases away from them. They say, our justice system is about maintaining good order and discipline, and we have to be able to control all of these things about a soldier to run an efficient military. And this gets at the crux of why these stories are so complicated, is at least for now, this is how things work. And, the military can have a lot of jurisdiction over these cases. So, we really like to point that out to readers, is the military is both an employer and a justice system. And it's hard to think of an equivalent in civilian life. If you sign up for the military, you are really signing away a lot of your rights to almost like a different government, right? Yes, it's the American government, but it's a completely different judicial system you might be subject to. And the flip side of that is, if you are a civilian who might be a victim of a crime involving a soldier off post, if the military decides, to take that case and the local DA or county attorney agrees to it, you may be dealing with a system that you don't understand at all, right? If you aren't the spouse or weren't in the military yourself, suddenly you have to navigate a completely different world, and that can be very complicated.
We should also note it could work the other way, right? The army could more harshly punish people for crimes that in the civilian sector are not considered such a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, I mean, AWOL is kind of the classic example that we think of, I think, when we think of a military-specific crime that they can punish you for. But, you could go to court-martial for disobeying a commander, for disobeying orders. In the military, this has evolved a little bit, but, extramarital conduct, you can be charged with a crime for that in the military. So essentially adultery, having an affair. You can go to trial for that, which is, I think there are a few states left in the US where that may still be on the books, but we've talked to lawyers who are like, we can't think of examples of where that's actually used in some of those civilian states. But it's still charged in the military.
Is there any mechanism by which the US military can be held accountable for releasing soldiers through administrative separation into communities, and then those soldiers then commit more crimes? Is the military liable?
I can't think of an example of where the military has faced necessarily consequences for those kinds of things. It's very hard, because of the way our military and federal laws are set up for you to, for example, to bring a civil action against the military. If you said, I feel like the military was negligent, let's say you're sexually assaulted and you feel like the military was negligent in handling your crime, it's very hard to actually get that case to go anywhere. It would be interesting, and if anyone out there has examples, please let us know of trying to hold the military liable for these kinds of cases.
We also know that the military has been dealing for some time with kind of soldier-on-soldier sexual violence. What do we know about how this practice of letting accused soldiers go might affect the likelihood that victims of sexual assault by a fellow soldier will even report crimes committed against them?
That's a really interesting question. I'm not sure if I can totally answer how this practice specifically might affect someone's decision whether or not to report. I think in general that's a concern and has been a concern for the military and advocates alike of are people coming forward? Because I think there's still this fear that there's a stigma against reporting. A stigma against being treated differently. One of the women we spoke to for this case, in the Alaska case, she was transferred to another posting so she wouldn't have to see her alleged attacker. But that was difficult too, because not everyone, for good reason, I guess, at her new posting knew why she was there. But, she told us when she wanted maybe to go to behavioral health, it was sometimes hard to get that helped, because it's like, well, you need to be in the field. Not everyone understood that she had been a victim of this crime. So these are complicated cases.
Who could amend these practices? Is it something that Congress could pass laws around, or are these policies that the military has complete control over at the moment?
It's a bit of a mix in general when it comes to the military, as far as what are things that could be changed, without congressional involvement. Again, the change that's happening at the end of this year that will go into effect, or should go into effect in December, with the new creation of this Office of Special Trial Counsel, that had to come from Congress. So I feel like I'll have a better chance of answering that question once we see those practices go into effect and we see, okay, well, administrative reparations in lieu of court-martial that are related to these cases that these new prosecutors are going to handle, the sexual assault cases, for example, does that change? And if it doesn't, does Congress need to come back again and change these rules again? We certainly hope that Congress is paying attention to this practice. And something that we should point out, this is the kind of thing that a lot of the attorneys we spoke to, former and current military attorneys, said, well, this is just sort of how it is. And people have reached out to us and sent and said, this is just how it is, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's always how it should be.
Viana Davila is a reporter with the ProPublica Texas Tribune Investigative Initiative, which published the article she wrote with co-author Lexi Churchill titled, "The Army Increasingly Allows Soldiers Charged with Violent Crimes to Leave the Military Rather Than Face Trial." Viana, I really appreciate your reporting on this, and thanks so much for sharing the story with us. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.